Comic-Con podcast. Today we are talking about the Indiana Jones movies. So we have a lean and mean crew today. Go around, introduce yourself, and say which magical artifact you are. I am Marissa, and I am the stone with the lions on it.
The stone with the lions on it?
The Shankara stone?
It's the Temple of Doom.
Okay. Oh, that's like... Oh, wait, this... Like, okay, sorry. You picked the best one that I couldn't even remember.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm Jesse, and I am Dan Aykroyd's Crystal Skull Vodka.
I am Nathaniel, and I guess I am the Holy Grail.
That's right.
I should say up front that we did a whole two-part podcast on Spielberg already, but we didn't really talk about the Indiana Jones movies that much in that.
I don't remember. I should have listened before to see.
No.
I don't think we
did. You know, you can go back and listen to those. And maybe we'll start at the end and with Dial of Destiny. We'll try to keep it spoiler light up top. And I'm not going to ask if it worked for you, because you guys being who you are, the answer is definitely yes. So, tell me, how do you guys feel about old Indiana Jones? Is it a bummer seeing him that old? Are you happy to see him again?
Feeling the cold hand of death on your shoulder as you watch the movie?
Shuffling through his scenes.
I feel like I'm more interested in what you think of that, because you're the one who likes Harrison Ford the least in the descending order of Nathaniel to me to you. How did you see old Harrison Ford is my question.
Yeah, he's old. So in the beginning where he had the, you know, kind of digitally sweetened up face, and that didn't, like, bother me as much as it has in other movies, but, you know, he still moves like an old man.
Is he now, Nathaniel, I'm sure can answer this, how old is Indiana Jones supposed to be? 80, which is Harrison Ford's age, or he's supposed to be supposed to be a little bit younger.
No, right? Yeah, so, since, I want to say Last Crusade, definitely in Crystal Skull, he's playing Indy, like, almost a decade younger than he is. Because, like, Last Crusade was 89, Raiders was 81.
Mm-hmm.
So 8 years passed, but only, like, I think 2 years passed in the movies. And then in The Crystal Skull, he's playing Indy at, like, 58, mm-hmm. I think. And he was mid-60s, probably, in that movie. And in this one, he's 80, and Indiana Jones in the movie is 70 years old. Because Indiana Jones, as Young Indiana Jones Chronicles tells you in the first episode, was born July 1st, 1899.
Okay. Same year as my great-grandma, actually.
Oh, yeah?
She was in 1899, yeah.
So yeah, in this new one, I guess you'd have to look up when the ticker tape parade was.
69.
Yeah.
It was 69, but I don't know, like,
if
when.
It's before, after.
If he's 70 or if he's.
Is it a 4th of July parade? Yeah.
So he's right around 70.
Yeah, so he's around 70. And so like, when this movie was made, I think Ford was probably, like, 78.
Yeah.
Because he's 80 now, 79.
So also, when we talk about these kind of, like, later sequels, we're talking about, like, does it grapple enough with the aging of the character? He did not grow a beard, which was, like, one of our two main criteria.
It would have been.
Well, it's funny because, like, if you, like, when Crystal Skull came out, you know, the trailer has the gag even of him, like, missing the whip swing.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a couple gags in the trailer that were meant, I think, to sort of indicate, like, yes, we know he's an old man. And then you watch it now and you're like, well, he actually doesn't, like...
He looks very nice now.
his hair is gray.
Yeah, that's all.
You know, and then, like, this one is made then of, like, a similar gap between movies from, like, Last Crusade to Crystal Skull and then to this one. And now he, like, legit... I mean, I think it's kind of nice that, like, Indy is supposed to be 70, Ford is 80, and in 1969, a, like... 70-year-old man seems like 80. But this movie, you know, like, obviously, just by it just has to almost, and I think this probably was part of the project of doing this one, was, like, it had to acknowledge it even more than Crystal Skull, which already Crystal Skull, you know, has a lot of, like, what are you supposed to be, 80 things, and, you know, like, it's not as easy as it used to be. But this movie's, like, all about it, really. Like, even you mentioned the prologue. Like, even I feel like the point of that prologue, it's like, I didn't look it up, but I'm pretty sure some quick mental math, I'm pretty sure that the gap between the prologue of Last Crusade and the body of Last Crusade is the same as the gap between the prologue and this movie.
Might be like train sequences.
Yeah, and it might be like a year or two off, but yeah. I think it's like pretty much the same gap between prologue and body of movie. And then it is like, it's like a, you can tell like they're announcing their intentions so hard up front that like they show you Indiana Jones with like beautiful young Harrison Ford, and then he's not only just like an old man asleep in his apartment, but like shirtless and bellowing at his neighbors about playing the Beatles, you know, like he's an old man in the modern stuff.
I wish that prologue had been either shorter or just a little more chill, because I felt like they were really trying to give you the, like, we have the technology now, we can give you, in addition for the thematic counterpoint, we can give you one last hurrah with Harrison Ford DH, and it is, you know, technology is improving all the time. It's like fairly convincing face de-aging, less convincing voice de-aging. But that whole sequence had an uncanny feeling to me for a different reason, and that is that it feels like a 2023 action blockbuster where nothing really looks real in it, including Harrison Ford, since we know that's not really him. The train, you know, being on the roof of a train looks fake. It's under cover of night to try to mitigate the fakeness. It still looks fake. Kind of makes look faker. There's like tons of special effects in it, and it just doesn't look that great. And I feel like a shorter thing, like the Crusade prologue, does it just about perfectly. I know people don't like it because it's like very on the nose, like how he did this.
Right. People don't like it?
I think some people think that's a little silly or like a little like, oh, you all the, I mean,
people am I meant to believe that this all happened
in one day?
And scar and hat and fear of snakes? And...
Right. And it's, that to me is like very playful and silly and fun. Yeah. And like, you know, I don't take
people are no fun.
Yeah, well, and I have that problem a little bit with Last Crusade in general, but that's part of it, not at all.
There.
And in this, I think something more like that, in terms of brevity, would have really done the trick for me in terms of, like, well, you want to see young Indiana Jones before the contrast of him waking up shirtless and grumpy and telling them to turn off the magical mystery tour by the Beatles. Disney just profligate spending. Yeah. Just give us a Beatles song. We don't care.
Yeah, so, like, do you think that it, like, grapples enough with the 60s setting? Like, I would actually say no, because we just watched Born on the 4th of July, because you have a Tom Cruise thing going on. And I was like, this takes place in the same year as that.
Yeah.
And feels like, well, it's still the 40s with a couple hippies in the background.
Yeah, know? I feel like it's more to me that it... I got way more interested in the movie when we got to old Indiana Jones, when we got to him being grumpy and alone and in his easy chair and you know, drinking more than he probably should at his age at that time of the day, and feeling like, you know, riding the subway, feeling like the world is passing him by. That stuff I thought was really interesting. And I think watching that made me go, oh boy, I kind of wish I hadn't had to sit through a full half an hour. I don't think it was quite half an hour, but it's, you know, it's extended, that beginning of it. Of pretending, of...
Did you feel that same way about the parade sequence?
No, because it's old, because he's old. It was cool, because he's old. Like, I think it's...
He wasn't, like, actually riding a horse in the real New York City.
No, it looks a little fake, but, like, it's in a way that, to me, was at least kind of interesting, because you're watching the character in a different circumstance than just, like, being Indiana Jones fighting the Nazis, you know? Like, it felt like, okay, this did feel like a different context, but you're talking about, like, this is the 60s. He's, like, riding through a protest at one point, and, like, has to blend in, he, like, has to blend in with the protesters, right, to, like, when the cops are, or the agents are after him. That stuff, and you know, there's lots of parallels in these things in the movies themselves, and also my reactions to them is similar to how I felt about the beginning of Crystal Skull, where I was like, oh, like when he's being chased through the college campus, I was like, I love this. This is great. This is not exactly what I was expecting from Indiana Jones.
The diner
with the greasers, or the beginning of Crystal Skull with the kind of hip teenagers drag racing the military guys, stuff like that, where you are seeing a different side of Indiana Jones and type what this movie could be like. That's when I was kind of most excited by it. So I, even though the ticker tape, yeah, it's not, I mean, none of these action sequences are really moved like a Spielberg action sequence. But the horse one in the Korea, I was like, at least the context of it is interesting to me, and I didn't think that about Nazis on the train, even though there's some nice moments.
To me, there's like almost like two parts to that question, so where like there's like the film of it. So, because like something that was actually kind of shocking to me in this movie and kind of bracing and interesting, and it partly maybe just like it's a 2023 movie, it might be the shift from Mangold, from Spielberg to Mangold, and like, you know, the kind of creative people behind the scenes. But the end part of it, I think, is intentional, that like, you know, he wakes up in 1969, and the movie, and this is often like the way these movies are described, is like, we're gonna like take another genre and kind of put this character into it. And this movie, for me, legit, I don't know, I have not read interviews, so I don't know if this is how they're talking about it, but like for a while I was like, oh, this is Indiana Jones in like 3 Days of the Condor, where like the violence is shocking and upsetting. Like Boyd Holbrook is like murdering people in Indy's college in a way that like those other movies just don't have that kind of violence coming home. And like Indy's reaction to it there, and then later with someone on the boat in the Grease sequence, where he's like genuinely
stricken
by like these people have been murdered, and you know, he feels culpable and he feels, you know, horrible about this and upset, and then like even the scoring of it with like the little kind of like, you know, kind of the spooky piano stings that come in instead, like you don't hear the Indiana Jones theme again, I think, until Sala yells, "Go, you know, give him hell, Indiana Jones."
Yeah.
And even then, he kind of like drops the theme into kind of like a little cutesy version when Indy's almost hit by the cab. You know, like they turn it into kind of like a joke of like, oh, he's kind of coming back, but he's, you know, he's still on his back foot. So like in that way, it did feel like, oh, this, like Crystal Skull updates sort of the genre trappings or like ideas of it a little bit, but like the filmmaking is still just like pure thrilling, you know, Spielberg adventure-y sort of stuff. When this one, it definitely felt more like, oh, I mean, like the race, the horse chase in the parade is kind of getting back into a more Indiana Jones vibe, but like when it's him being like menaced by gunmen who are like murdering people, and you know, he's got blood on his hands when he picks up the phone and stuff, that all felt more like, oh, this is Indiana Jones in like a, you know, 60s, 70s thriller. And even like the stuff on the boat also, I was like, oh, it's like, it feels a little bit like The Deep almost, or like one of those, you know, movies. I can't remember if that's the correct title for the one I'm thinking of, but like, there's just like, it updates the film references in an interesting way where like, it's still an Indiana Jones movie. It's got a lot of like, you know, the puzzles and traps and adventure stuff, but also, it does feel in a different way than Crystal Skull of trying to be like, we are taking this character and changing his context a little bit. And then the other part of it is that like, so I love the Indiana Jones movies, but also like, at some point when they came out on DVD, I don't know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the Young Indiana Jones show, which I only seen like little bits of and pieces of here and there, I really love that show, and it also like really changed like my view of the character to being like, oh, he's like the vision went from being like the perfect 30s adventurer to like, oh, he is the like most interesting man in the world for the 20th century. Like, he's met all these people, he's seen all this stuff. He like was born in 1899, and he's gonna like die in 1999, and he's gonna like encompass this century. And so like seeing him in this context also is like, oh yeah, what is Indiana, that was like kind of exciting for me to be like, oh yeah, what is Indiana Jones experience of like the year that they land on the moon, you know, and like how is he still,
wait, are you saying that the show kind of like Forrest Gump's him,
or? A little, yeah. So the idea, the Young Indiana Jones show, the idea was that it's like, we're gonna make a history show, like George Lucas typical George Lucas fashion was like, I have this idea of this thing I want to do, and I have this like incredibly popular thing I've created, so I'm going to use that to do this thing I want to do, where he's like, I want to make an educational show. And I think it was like the Clone Wars, where he just like made the show and then got ABC to show it until they canceled it, and then still like made a few more after that, just because he like wanted to do it and was like, maybe we'll sell it to schools, maybe we'll do, you know, like but so the idea is like, there's like young Indy that's like 10 years old or 9 years old or something, and he goes on adventure, like goes on a world tour with his father when he's like doing lectures around the world, And then again at like age 18, 19 as Sean Patrick Flannery. And like, yeah, he meets, like, in Crystal Skull, there's a reference to him riding with Pancho Villa. That's an episode of the show. And like, but he meets Kafka, he meets Picasso, kind of like, you know. Yeah, it's like, you know, he meets T.E. Lawrence and then meets him again, as, he meets him as a kid, and then again, like, he's one of the inspirations for him becoming an archaeologist. And like, so yeah, he's like the person where, like, I think the original wraparounds of the show are like 90-year-old Indiana Jones with an eye patch, like, telling rambling stories to whoever will listen. But like, yeah, then it becomes like, oh, this is a guy who, like, experienced and saw every interesting thing for the 20th century.
And you said the original wraparounds, like, scrub it?
So yeah, originally when it ran, it had, like, you know, wraparound sequences of, like, another actor playing old, like, 90-year-old Indiana Jones, like, sometimes talking to, like, a daughter or a granddaughter, I think, and sometimes he's just, like, telling, like, people at a museum or whoever he runs into, like, oh, this reminds me of the time. And, like, famously, there's one episode that they shot where Harrison Ford plays, like, 50-year-old Indiana Jones, like, between Last Crusade and Crystal Skull, who does the storytelling. But then what happened was that the original episodes were all, I think, meant to be hour-long, so, like, they're about 45 minutes. And then, again, in, like, George Lucas style, he went back and was like, we're going to, you know, like, this is no longer a TV show because ABC's not airing it, so we're going to turn them into these series of movies. And so he, like, bolted episodes together, like, chronologically, and has some, like, little interstitial bits that they filmed later. So, like, 9-year-old Indy looks like 11 or 12 for a scene or two and then goes back because, you know, they're, like, kind of transitioning from episode to episode. So now there's a bunch of 90-minute movies with, and they removed all of the old indie stuff.
Except, I thought they did it because they didn't want, like, Harrison Ford to be eclipsed. Or,
well, so now they kept the Harrison Ford one because, like, obviously you're not going to cut scenes of Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones. But yeah, I don't know that I ever saw, like, an interview with Lucas of why that was done. But yeah, one assumes that it was like, well, Harrison's gonna come back and
do it.
No,
he is so. The age of that old actor.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, it's like, I think what you're saying is right about it being like 3 days of the Condor, but I think I was, like, a little bit disappointed that I liked in Crystal Skull that it was about aliens and, like, atomic energy and, like, 50s era, and then the new one kind of goes back to being like, oh, this is, we're looking for an ancient object that'll help the Nazis win World War II. I wanted it to be about something that would, like, open up space travel. Yeah. Or, like, something, like, a little bit more
60s. Indiana Jones and the Rocks from Mars.
I can see that, yeah. But in that way also, though, like, I mean, it's, like, really, it's almost, like, pretty on the nose that the thing he's looking for has to do with the concerns about, like, he's an old man that the world has passed by and, like, yeah. What... and it's also a little on the nose that, like, it's a 2023 movie about how, like, you can beat the Nazis, but they don't actually go away.
No. Right.
They're going to show back up, and there's going to be people who want to bring it back, and yeah. You just got to, like, smash them back down.
Yeah. I think both this and Crystal Skull, like, I didn't even think about that, about Three Doors of the Condor and stuff like that. And that's a very astute observation. That I think both of them sort of faint a little towards that, and this one especially, I felt throughout the movie, in a mostly enjoyed movie, that it felt like that was probably someone's draft. Probably had a little more of that in it, and I felt a surfeit, perhaps, of drafts being flipped through in this movie, especially when you get to Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Also, there's a child sidekick, but forget about him for a little while, but he'll be back later. And, like, not, like, the way it uses Nazis and time travel, it kind of feels like a... whose idea, you know, taking a lot of ideas from a bunch of different people and getting it into a movie where some of it is very forward-thinking and, like, considers Indiana Jones a new context. And some of it, and I felt this way about Crystal Skull too, feels like there was a little spit sense of, like, ooh, pull this back. Like, people won't like this. You know, people will rebel if you have too much of this with Indiana Jones and the Atomic Bomb and the stuff that I really like in the fourth one. And I felt a little bit of that as this one went on, even though it kind of also steadies as an action-adventure movie as it goes on. And, like, that sequence in... they're in the little cars. I forget where they are.
Oh, Tangier, I think?
Yeah, very cool. And, like, that's the time where I was, like, a little bit closer to... Okay, Mangold's not really on the level of even Maybe he's on the level of Spielberg directing Last Crusade. Maybe he's on the level of, like...
I don't like what this is. I'm talking about Last Crusade.
I was surprised when we rewatched it how uninspired the action sequences were for being Spielberg, where he's all young and stuff. He really, you know... He's just such a, like, dynamic director now that I was surprised to watch a movie from 1989 that felt a little stodgy. And, like, the Mangold action stuff, even though I've liked a lot of his movies, is not as dynamic as Spielberg's. And the part in Tangiers, I was like, well, this is at least getting to the, like, cause-effect, slapsticky kind of, like, one person jumps to one car and that knocks someone out of another car. And I was like, it's kind of getting into that. And, you know, and it also feels like a little more of a traditional Indiana Jones chase sequence. So it almost, like, you add one thing, like this really cool chase sequence, but they also are kind of taking something away by saying, well, this is going to imitate, like, the old Indiana Jones. And I feel like that kind of give and take happening throughout a lot of the movie, even though there were a lot of things. And I was most excited when the movie would kind of go someplace, like, this will not spoil the spoilers yet, but in the last half hour, I was like, wow, this is not what I was expecting to see in an Indiana Jones movie, and that's very cool.
I don't know. You're complaining about both things, though. You're complaining about if it's too similar or if it's not.
Because I think it kind of wavers, it kind of wobbles around between those two, and that's, it's like, I was often wondering, is this a throwback?
What would your ideal have been?
I'm not sure. I think my ideal would be more towards something on the Indiana Jones in a 3 days at the Condor adventure type of thing.
And that like, when I brought up three days at the Condor, in part because it felt apt to me, both because of the, like, the feeling those sections gave me, and kind of the new kind of sense of anxiety, and that carried through, like, the violence in the movie. Not, I mean, you know, maybe in some of the chase sequences it felt just more kind of thrilling at Indiana Jones, but, like, the menace of the villains was different because they have them be so kind of just brutal in a more kind of modern violent way.
Yes, yes.
Early in the picture. But also the fact that, like, I found the, like, Mads Mikkelsen character and his, like, conception and use in the movie pretty interesting, but also his, like, relationship with, like, the CIA and all of that was, like, murky in a way that reminded me of Three Days of the Condor in a way that was, like, you know, by the time you get to Tangier and it kind of just smooths itself out because then it's just, like, he's just doing his own thing.
Right.
But before that, I did feel like, again, maybe productively in some sense, and maybe also just, like, you know, murky in a way that, you know, I didn't feel resolved to me necessarily.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, especially the young woman they have, who's, like, supposed to be sort of a good guy, or, like...
There's, like, interesting stuff going on with her, but then you do kind of have to dispense with her to get on to the rest of it.
To get back to the normal Indiana Jones stuff. And, yeah, that something else that kind of felt like, oh, well, someone wrote a draft where they really liked this character.
Where, like, in 3 Days of the Condor, you know, you spend all the movie being like, I don't know why any of this is happening, but, like, these people are very pretty, and, like, this is, you know, frightening or exciting or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, those people did not deserve what happened to them. Yeah. So, yeah, we brought up Phoebe Waller-Bridge. What did you think of, like, the new characters like that?
The new characters like that.
Like her and Teddy, which, like, you already said.
Is Teddy the kid?
Yeah.
Yeah. One that, like, I thought it was interesting that she's basically Temple of Doom Indiana Jones, right? Like,
yeah.
She's, like, she's different. I mean, she's like, Fortune Glory, she's, like, skilled in a lot of the ways he is. She's got her own short round. You know, she's, like, a little further outside. You know, she's not quite as respectable even as he is in theory in Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
But, like, pretty similar, and that, like, her version of Temple of Doom is, like, spending time with Indiana Jones and coming around.
Yeah.
As opposed to spending time in a Temple of Doom and coming around.
Yes.
You know? So I thought that was cool. And also, I thought she was, like, a delight in the movie. She
yeah, like, I liked her performance. I don't know that I love the writing of the character. It felt, again, a little, like, how antagonistic is she supposed to be towards Indy? And I was also just, like, not a fan of contentious banter unless it's very good and sharp. And having them just, like, argue while they're driving cars, that's just not, like, I mean, like, I just didn't care for that. I just think it was, like,
she called herself, like, independent and fabulous.
Yeah, like, yeah. How did you become like this? What? Become like, what, beautiful, independent?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Self-sufficient.
Yeah. There's a little, you know, like, this was in the trailer, so I was, like, prepared for, like, you know, again, this is, again, with a feeling of, like, oh, well, there was a draft I probably would have really disliked that had a lot of this stuff. You know, and I stole it from you. Yeah, it's called capitalism. And it's like, do we, the, yeah, okay, you know, like the 2023 clip quips about late capitalism being inserted into 1969.
Right. Like 1969 when like everyone was anti-communism.
Right, right. Like,
in context though, that it didn't play the way it did in the trailer to me. Like, it's much more just like she's trying to get back to her auction.
Yeah.
She's like,
yes.
It's capitalism. Let's resume our capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of that kind of writing of that character that I just found like, well, if this was witty, I would probably give it a pass. But I did think she's fun to watch, and like, it's an interesting solution to like, you know, this Indiana Jones, like, and the sidekick dilemma, which I feel like the last couple before this did not really master in retrospect, you know, because I feel like at the time, maybe, and there's other racism in Temple of Doom, but I think even at the time, there was probably, I don't know if that, maybe people didn't notice at the time, the short round, like, anything that seems questionable about having this sort of, like, shticky kid stuff that kind of is, you know, some of it's sort of maybe trying to get a laugh out of his accent or whatever. But in retrospect, now, he's, like, so clearly, besides Marion, of course, the best of Indy's sidekicks. Like, he's so much, he's a fun character, really engagingly played by Kei Hoi Kwan. Like, a delightful little character. We watched it with our kids. She wanted to watch Temple of Doom first because it had a kid in it. And, like, it doesn't have that kind of mawkish, like, oh, Jesus, it's the one with the kid. Like, maybe that people felt that way at the time, but he's wonderful. And Last Crusade, another thing, watching Last Crusade again, I was like, oh, boy, he's, like, toting around Sala and Marcus, who I like as characters, but as, like, sidekicks on the adventure, it's a little...
Well, the sidekick in that one is his dad.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Each movie... He accumulates more.
Yes, yeah, and Crystal Skull is even worse. You got this whole fucking
family
trip.
He's got Marion in the first one, yeah. And then, like, when Marion's gone, it's Sala, and then it's back to Marion.
Yeah.
And in Temple of Doom, he's got Willy and Short Round, and then Last Crusade, he ends up, like, he doesn't, you know, he's, like, a single sidekick for the first half of the picture.
Yes.
And then it's, like, then he's got three people with him.
Yeah.
Crystal Skull, he ends up with, like, four people with him.
Yeah.
And, like, the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, yeah, like a lot of these, you know, Lethal Weapon, it reminded me of.
A necessary correction this time, that he just can't have five people.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought the Phoebe Waller-Bridge character is an elegant solution to that. His goddaughter, let's just cut it off at that. Although even then, they do, like, you know, she has a sidekick who needs to be, and is not really that well-developed, and is thrown back into it. I thought this one made a better use of a character like Sala, where he's there and can provide a little color and, like, connection to the other movies, but you don't have to have them all in the fucking raft going down the waterfall together. So I appreciated her function in that way.
Would you watch an Indiana Jones movie without him, but with her?
I mean, I would watch anything. But do I think that character is compelling enough on her own to like, do a whole movie about? I'm not sure, but, like, I watch Phoebe Waller-Bridge, like, do Daring Do, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, like, her playing, like, the sassy adventuress? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds good to me.
Did you like her as the lady?
Yeah,
in the group?
I mean, I liked her. You liked her as the droid in Star Wars.
A Star Wars story.
Yeah.
I feel like other people have had it with her.
I do think other people have had it with her, and I kind of get. I feel like, you know, it's the same thing that always happens. People built up Fleabag like it was like this fucking perfect monument of television. And I think now people are coming back, swinging back to, like, ah, oh, we don't like her. And I was like, well, maybe if you guys weren't so weird about Fleabag in the first place, like, if you just, like, were like, yeah, that was a pretty clever show.
Just don't, like, it's, like, a similar arc to, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, but
yeah.
It's, like, she hasn't even done as much stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Where has she been that people are getting tired of her?
She, in fact, sort of, like, demurred from doing, she was going to do Mr. and Mrs. Smith or whatever, the TV show, and then didn't do that, which sounded like a smart idea. I think there's maybe some kind of reaction that she does attach herself to, she was attached to that, and she's attached to Tomb Raider, and they're sort of like, oh, the Fleabag person, like, wants to do these, you know, these big things, and they probably would like to see her do, like, a, you know, another TV show like Fleabag or whatever. I, not being that attached to Fleabag, don't really care what she does. Was happy enough to see her. I kind of would have liked it more if she, I mean, this, Crystal Skull does this a little bit too, where it's like, you're introducing all these characters, and I like, that's kind of part of the series, right? Like, Toby Jones is, like, another heretofore unseen Indiana Jones sidekick,
right.
And he certainly fits the mold, and I love Toby Jones.
Yeah, and he talks about his dicky knee before he jumps in the water.
Yes.
That was delightful.
Yeah, he's very funny. But, like, it might make more sense for her to be someone else, to be the goddaughter of someone we've seen before, I don't know. Like, that might have made,
I
or the
that's,
daughter,
that's
rather.
Cheesy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean.
Actually, like, you know, you guys were talking about, like, how you were affected by him, like, thinking about the past. I don't know if we're going to, like, veer into spoiler territory, but, like, the stuff about him and Mary and divorcing and Poochie going back to his home planet is, like...
Yeah, no, I think we can talk about spoiler stuff. I was curious how people thought about, like, the Marion stuff is a little weird just because, like, it has to undo and redo something that Crystal Skull already did. And then they permanently undo Crystal Skull's introduction of Indiana Jones' son, Mutt, by having him having died in Vietnam. Which I think the movie handles pretty well. They kind of offhandedly mention it, and then he talks about it a little further in the movie, and it's an emotional moment. And... But again, with the kind of multiple draft thing, it's like, this is like half spiteful, we don't like this character, audiences didn't like it, get rid of him, and half graceful moment for Indiana Jones to express feelings of grief and loss. And I don't know how exactly it landed for me, especially combined with, well, then Marion leaves him.
Yeah, it's
then...
like, having Shia LaBeouf not be in the movie, great choice. like, that's the way they did it, that makes sense to me. It's the fact that it's like... Oh, but they're gonna get divorced. But then she has to come back with the grocery. It's
I did believe that they were getting divorced.
It's like it's a success for him when she comes in to cook him dinner with his groceries, which is not really how I picture Marion Ravenwood.
Oh, I mean, I had a little bit of that
in her sunset years. You know, like taken care of.
Crystal Skull had a little bit of that too for me, where it's just sort of like Marion is sort of a. token for him, you know. It's she doesn't have that. I mean, it's rough because it's the business is rougher on women that age, and she also isn't Karen Allen isn't as big a star as Harrison Ford, so they know people aren't really paying to see 90 minutes of Karen Allen, even though she's great in
Raiders. Like she doesn't have to, like you said, she doesn't have to be in the raft with them, but it's like the fakey divorce that gets like immediately undivorced.
It's like and it's like a sweet. Ooh. I think it's a sweet ending for the character, but you kind of have to. Like I said, you have to undo something and then redo it in order to get there, and I don't know. I don't know if that was really that elegantly handled. And then the other, like, the stuff right before that, where he is back in time, legitimately back at the days of Archimedes, and wants to stay, I thought that was, like, such an interesting idea, even though I don't know that the movie even finds a really interesting way out of that, which is just that Phoebe Waller-Bridge knocks him out and brings him back against his will, and then calls Marion, like, she calls Marion, where it seems like, right? Like, she called Marion over there. So, it's like, and I get that she's, you know, she's doing something for him and is thinking about him beyond, like, how do I use him to get this treasure? But it kind of makes Indiana Jones a weirdly, I mean, he's passive, I guess, at the end of Raiders, too, where, like, the arc gets opened and he's there, and so that's maybe within the tradition of the movie. But I felt like, wow, Indy doesn't really make a decision in the end of the movie. He gets knocked out, and then someone else calls his wife, which is, like, probably realistic for an old man, but it's, like, kind of a bummer in a way. Like, okay, let's get you home and call your wife, and she'll come back. Like, that's, I mean, you know, that is what would happen with an 80-year-old guy, but I don't know. I don't know. I didn't think that really completely, even though the feelings it gave me, I was engaged, but the brain side of it, I was kind of going, I don't know about that. But Nathaniel, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who really liked Mutt Williams, Henry Jones III.
Yeah.
I was like when they show his photo at the beginning, even before you have any, you know, you just see the photo on the folded flag. I was like, it made me really sad.
Yeah.
And then similarly with like the business about, you know, the like separation agreement with Marion or whatever. And seeing where Indy ended up, I legit was really, like, bummed out by that. And I think that probably contributed also to my, like, being unsettled and you know, really thrown by the kind of, like, the vibe, the thrillery vibe of some of the early sections in the 60s. And, like, yeah, I wasn't really thinking that much during the movie about, like, oh, this is how they solve the Shia LaBeouf. Like, I was just in the movie. I was like I said, I like that character, so I was, like, interested to know what would happen to him, and was really sad that that was what had happened to him.
Yeah.
It makes sense, like, you know, I guess, and, like, the conversation Indy has with Helena on the boat later, I found, like, really affecting. Like, Ford is, like, I thought, like, really, really moving in that scene. And in part because of, like, the way that, and by the time you get to the end of the movie and see what Marion has to say to him, realizing in retrospect, like, oh, that when he's talking about, like, she was so consumed by her grief and I couldn't help her out of it. But Marion asks him, are you back, Indy? So it's really, it seems more likely that, like, he became a drunk sad sack who couldn't, like, maybe he was blaming himself for how she was feeling or whatever it was, but that, like, she leaves him because he's not Indiana Jones anymore because this is like really wrecked him. So I like, yeah, I like that stuff. I did find like really moving, and like it's the only Indiana Jones movie I think that has like made me actually like tear up and cry. Like at the end, the scene with Marion really got me. And the business in the past also, I agree with you, Jesse, that like it's a really interesting, you know, all the trailers have Phoebe Waller-Bridge being like Indiana Jones, a final triumph, which, you know, is actually from a scene where she's trying to kind of con him.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, this movie doesn't have him, like, standing in triumph at the end. It is him kind of, like, looking back and saying, like, I want to stay and do this. This is, like, this seems like the last thing for me. And this person that he has this kind of fractured relationship with, that he's, like, both this and Crystal Skull, in part, are about a, like, kind of younger character coming to love and respect him the way that, that like as a kid I did, yeah, watching the movies, you know. And so, you know, the fact that she, you know, they both start from a position of like very far away from him, different positions from each other, but like, you know, still like it's a lot of the movie is them kind of like, both movies is that younger character kind of seeing him for who he actually is.
Yeah.
And so like then in the end, the fact that like his triumph in quotes is not him deciding to stay in the past or deciding to return to his life or anything, but it's that he like has convinced this woman who's like so mercenary at the beginning of the movie that she like comes to this, you know, man that she hasn't seen for years and has this connection with to try and bilk him out of something that she can sell, yeah, for her gambling debts. Instead is, like, pleading with him and eventually just, like, knocks him out in order to, like, drag him back to his life. Both for her and also, you know, I imagine she's thinking about Marion or, you know, like,
yeah,
the other people in his life. And then, yeah, when Marion shows up to see... I also, you know, like, Indiana Jones, for being a heroic character, also, like, Ford, like, so much of it is, like, he's playing the, like, the off-center version of that. Even, like, Raiders, he's, like... you know, shoots the swordsman and throws sand in the big German's eyes when he's fighting. And, you know, he's, like, got this, like, secret identity as a bookish professor. And he's, you know, kind of, like, there's bad blood between him and Marion because he obviously did something really bad. Like, there's all these things that say that he's, like, not really that great of a guy. He's just, like, a cool character.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's the same thing where, you know, at the beginning, it's kind of played as a joke that he puts the magnet over Marion's face. And then when he's in the his apartment, kind of, you know, with a gunshot wound and kind of very vulnerable, and she comes in, and he's like by the fridge and kind of surreptitiously takes the magnet off of her face,
yeah.
And that to me is like a really perfect little Indiana Jones moment of like this kind of just little sheepish thing, bit of business that yeah, at the end of this finale movie for him, that he's like the guy who's like, oh yeah, I do care about you. I don't want you to see that I did this.
Yeah.
A moment of pettiness. I do think there was like a little bit of a false like emotion in there when he's in the past being like, there's nothing for me in the present. And then obviously she like drives him back to the present and there's like 90 people in his apartment that all worship him and have worshipped him for 27 movies, and Salah was like praising him in the beginning to his like kids and grandkids talking about how great he is, and
yeah,
he's like, there's nobody for me in the present.
I did appreciate though that they didn't do the legacy sequel thing of like, the idea for this new character is, get this, they're also a fan of Indiana Jones, just like you, you know, like,
right,
which they did, like, very, like, successfully in Force Awakens, having characters who were, like, revere the old,
right,
Star Wars, like, people and fans do. But I was relieved that it wasn't a case of, like, oh, the big fan of Indiana Jones is so excited to meet him, and then is disappointed by him, and then he rises to the level that they, you know, that kind of stuff was not in play. That's, you know...
But can we talk about, like, the going back to the time of Archimedes? I like that.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
really,
that was cool.
Yeah, I like the big swing of that. It's like a neat direction to take that stuff into. That was something I was missing a little bit from the Crystal Skull. Crystal Skull does, like, have interdimensional alien travel, but the movie just kind of renders it kind of in a limp way. And this one, it really, like, feels... exciting and I don't know, visceral in a way that the end of that movie doesn't, where he's, you know, you are kind of worried that they're gonna get, and I like how wrecked the plane gets by the old-timey soldiers, and like it's an immediate threat, like it's not like, oh, this is a, what a curiosity this is, like it's like he's going to die if he stays here,
right?
He's wounded with a bullet and is like has no recourse.
I liked the twist on the, like, this thing doesn't do what the villain thinks it does.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, which is a motif in these,
yeah.
for the MacGuffins in these movies. And, like, I feel like almost it's missing, one extra bit of setup that, like, it's a call, like, they call back, she calls back to her card trick on the boat,
uh-huh.
there to say, like, it's a trick deck, it's a... not trick deck, but like a forced hand or whatever.
Yeah.
Like she says, like I tricked you into taking the card that I wanted you to take. And it feels like that's like a very faint motif to pay off there at the end. It was really, I thought it was pretty like a fun, satisfying twist that like, oh, he built this thing just so you would come.
Yeah.
Like save my town. But you know, I like that there's like kind of two twists there where Indy first thinks he's figured out why they're going to end up in the wrong place, and he's right, but not for the reason he thought he was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, it's the sort of thing, like, as that sequence was playing out, especially as he's like meeting Archimedes, and again, Ford is like really terrific in that scene, I thought, and then, I was like genuinely worried because I was like, this is really cool, but I don't want Indiana Jones. Like, I was imagining the ending of the movie being like, Helena discovering the tomb of Indiana Jones,
yeah.
in the present or something.
Yes.
I mean, like, I don't think that I want that.
Yeah.
That's not...
But she was also right in that you can't have somebody with knowledge of the future stay in the past.
Yeah,
but...
no, she's right about everything.
Yeah.
In that last conversation. He's, like, just, you know, he's...
feeling sorry for himself.
Yeah, he's been shot. He's, like, very recently had, you know, this conversation again about his, like, dead son and what that's done to his life, and yeah, it's understandable why he's kind of where he's at, I think. But.
Yeah,
I almost wish we had spent like more time in the time of Archimedes, though, like do some kind of little mission there.
I wouldn't have minded seeing a little more of that kind of stuff, and not just to kill, not go on the boat just to kill poor Antonio Banderas.
I do. Oh, you know what? That though reminds me that like the Antonio Banderas character is like. It was, like, to me a little forgivable because it, like, continues the vibe of, like, oh, this is, like, a more unsettling version of violence in this movie. But it does the thing that a lot of the, like, Force Awakens does this constantly, and Rise of Skywalker does it too, of, like, introducing a new character or setting and then, like, destroying it as they leave.
Yes.
Because you don't want to destroy the characters that you know and love.
So right, but also, like, this weird thing of, like we're sweeping up after ourselves in this world. And they don't, you know, like, they obviously, like, don't destroy Hunter College or whatever, you know, like, every new setting that you go to in this movie or every new character you meet, but, like, the one new, big associate of Indiana Jones that they introduce that's, like, you know, of a Marcus Brody Sala style, like, oh, he's, like, going somewhere and, like, calling on, you know, he's the kind of guy who's, like, got someone he knows everywhere. And this new one that they introduce, they, like, kill him off. And again, it's, like, brutal in a way that is, like, I think intentional to make it, you know, the violence is still upsetting in this other way, but it was like the one big moment in the movie where I was like, oh, that's like too bad that you can't just like leave something that you've introduced there.
Yeah.
You know,
and this is complete bullshit theorizing, but I do tend to wonder with these things, not which is just with this movie, but in general, when movies like that do that, when it's like a legacy sequel, if that isn't a part of the, you know, the writing process where they have people working on it, where to this person rewriting it and saying, maybe we kill this guy, or maybe we blow up this location, it seems like a bigger deal, because they've read the previous draft where maybe they're in that location longer, and then to the person watching it, you're going, okay, I was here for 5 minutes, and you're kind of blowing it up for, you know, whether physically or metaphorically, for, like, a sense of gravitas that it's not going to... really going to come through, and exactly what Nathaniel's saying, you're just like,
or like one person creates it and the next person's like, well, I don't care if I kill that one, I didn't create it,
right, and then like, oh, like what about this, what if we kill this thing, and it's like, well, yeah, it doesn't gonna have that much impact, it just makes the world a little smaller that you just created. I did enjoy the diving bit, but like when they go under and look for the old-timey diving suits, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was actually the, for me, that was the action scene where I most miss Spielberg.
Oh, for sure.
Just in terms of like clarity, and like I feel like he would have made more of a meal of it instead of just like a sort of, you know, quick little burst of threat.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to talk more about the action?
I mean, just to say that it's, I don't think anyone would watch this movie and say Mangold's as good as Spielberg. Very graciously, I think, said, oh, I watched it and said something like, oh, I didn't think anyone could make these besides me, but you know, he really pulled it off. That's very kind. But like, that, because I like Mangold a lot, and I love his Wolverine movies in particular.
Which also has a train sequence.
Which also have a train sequence, and also, you know, for that matter, the Wolverine where he's in that same one where he's in Japan has a great, like, you know, intersecting. I just like love that shit where it's like
with history.
He's in the island of Japan when the bomb goes off and like protects a Japanese soldier who later comes back to
The bridge.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. But I don't think, and like I like a lot of the action scenes. That train sequence in Wolverine is really good, and there's a good like nighttime people shooting him with arrows scene later in that movie. But Mangold putting that thing up against Spielberg is such a cruel exercise, because he doesn't, that Chase in Tangiers, I think, is the only time it really touches a little bit of that Spielbergian. If you saw that in another movie, I think I was reading stuff online, people hated that too, or like didn't like, you know, thought it was like, oh, it's so flat and boring. And I was like, the Chase in Tangiers. But I think if you saw that in another movie that wasn't Indiana Jones, you'd go, hey, this is pretty good. This is like
it's
pacey,
like
it's snappy, it's got nice little moments in it, yeah.
And like, counterbeats.
And it's got a little bit of Spielberg energy to it. I think you probably would even say that if you saw it in something else.
Right.
You saw Wolverine in that chase, you'd say, yeah, it's like Spielberg's making like an Indiana Jones Wolverine. But when the comparison is more direct like that, you're going, well, this is no anything in Raiders. This is no, it's for me, not as good as anything in the first half of Crystal Skull, for that matter, which is not really known as a particularly great action movie, but like some of the stuff in that first 45 minutes is tip-top, really well-directed. And I think Mangold does a lot of other stuff well. I think he, like, handles the emotional end of it well and, like, seems to really like the character and kind of... I think there's a certain amount of believability to the special effects and it doesn't look like... I have some friends who complain about it looking computery, and I was like, I don't know, it looks like a movie to me. Like, it doesn't look like you're constantly watching a CG Harrison Ford, you know,
right,
being pasted in there. It has enough gravity and all that, but it, you know, you do wonder, boy, if Spielberg had done this, how good would those sequences have been? They would all have been really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, for me, I feel like it almost had the out of being like, well, Ford is 78.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, and the type of, like, I feel like it does a pretty fair job of, like, Indy does some stuff in the movie where you're like, yeah, 7-year-old guy doing that might hurt himself pretty bad. But it's, you know, they don't have him, like, fight the big guy.
Yeah.
In fact, they actually straight up have him, like, run away from the big guy the minute it looks like that fight's going to happen early in the picture. And, like, they don't have him swinging on the whip. You know,
no.
He uses the whip. He's not swinging around on it.
Yeah.
They don't have, you know, like, they limit, and he's driving the Duck-Duck. He, you know, there's, like, a bit or two where he jumps from vehicle to vehicle, and it's pretty thrilling because you're like, it's old Indiana Jones jumping from vehicle to vehicle again.
Is his hip going
to
make it?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, he's got some moves still, but he's not, like, doing all the same stuff. So, like, you know, it kind of more, it limits the palette of that stuff. And, again, I think, you know, like, again, we're comparing anybody to Spielberg for designing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a fair comparison anyway, but, like, it, to me, it had sort of that out of, like, well, this is pretty fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's Indiana Jones. Like, that, you know, like, that all stuff all fell right to me in a way, where it was like, okay, that's what I really need. I mean, because, you know, not only is it not directed by Spielberg, but, like, I don't think he would have made this movie. Like,
no.
I mean, obviously not. He didn't.
Yeah,
he chose not to. But, like, you know, it makes a lot of sense in retrospect to me that, like, oh, this is the Indiana Jones movie that, like, Harrison Ford wanted to stick around and, like, finally do before he felt like he was done with the character. And Spielberg at the same time was making The Fablemans, where he's, like, looking at his own life.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, obviously he must have signed off on, like, what this movie is, but it, like, makes sense that it's, like, not the one you would have gotten if Spielberg had done it. And it's like, who knows what that, like,
yeah,
you know, what that would have been.
Well, and there's always that interplay, the interesting interplay when you hear about behind the scenes stuff is always that it's difficult to get Spielberg, Lucas, and Ford on the same page with whatever screenwriter, with like, okay, we all like this. This is working for all of us, and we're going to all agree to do this. And it's not... What they do agree on doesn't always make for, like... I mean, like, I like the Indiana Jones movies a lot, and I was happy to see this one and like the character a lot. But part of it, I also just felt like a low... Not low expectations, but like a... There was not a lot of pressure for me. Like, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it's a perfect movie. And there's, like, some sequels where they do other different stuff that some of it's really interesting and some of it doesn't super work for me. It's that, to me, it's just like, yeah, it's not... They couldn't... Spielberg and Lucas and Ford had trouble getting on the same page to make, like, Last Crusade or Temple of... I mean, not... Those movies followed more quickly. Right. But you can sense the kind of, like, triangulating of, like, okay, what's just right for this? And Crystal Skull even more so, when it took forever for them to... You know, it wasn't... The design wasn't to wait 15 years or whatever, 19 years, whatever it was, to do Crystal Skull. They had talked about doing another one for a long time. So, and I think there's always a sense... And, like, it's interesting to watch this movie and go, oh, so this is what... If you take Spielberg and Lucas out of the equation...
Right.
Presumably, as you're saying, maybe Ford has a little more... input, or it's a little more driven by, like, well, what does Ford want to do?
Right.
And that's an interesting kind of experiment in, like, yeah. Okay, this is Ford, like, I imagine he probably is a little less input on some of the earlier ones, as long as he's not like, well, I hate this.
Yeah, no, I mean, presumably he had, like, you know, a lot of input in, like, how that character is presented, but, like, yeah, in this one, it's like, if he's got a suggestion, and he's telling James Mangold, this is what Indiana Jones should do here, or, like, this is what I think is right.
Yeah.
You imagine, I mean, I'm sure Mangold has his own ideas about it, but, like, you also imagine, like, there's a little bit of, like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, he probably has a lot of pull. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. I thought of it at first, like, oh, it's sort of an interesting experiment, and, like, what if this was, you know, this was sort of conceived as their James Bond series, but it, of course, wasn't really, because you weren't cranking one out every 3 years with a journeyman director. You have these three very specific people working on them. And this is this kind of experiment in, even though it's much more personal and much more, like, emotional, at the same time, it's like, oh, well, what if this was a thing, a James Bond thing, where, like, a more journey, like, Mangold could easily have done a Bond movie at some point, like, or yeah. Still might, for that matter, you know? And it's like, what if this was more like a James Bond thing, but also was tasked with doing this emotional wrap-up? Like, what if you waited till the last James Bond movie?
Right.
To do, like, you know, and they kind of did the last James Bond movie with the most recent Craig one, but, like... And it's this kind of similar deal where it's like, oh, this is some ways more personal, and some ways it's like another one of these. And yeah. That's there's an interesting tension there, even though I don't always love how it pays off. But I think that's true of almost all of them, except Raiders. It's like there's an interesting tension there. I don't always think it necessarily pays off.
We talked about how, like, we all like the beginning of Crystal Skull a lot. I think that where it falls off is, like, the puzzle solving. There really isn't any. Just like, oh, there's a thing behind a waterfall, and there's the waterfall right there. This one comes back to puzzle solving.
Yeah, there is some good puzzle solving in this. I like her, Helena's the precise translation of the tablet thing being very important. That's very
well, yeah, that and like all, yeah, like I think the difference for the puzzles between, like, Crystal Skull and this one is that the puzzles in Crystal Skull are, like, a little less convincing about, like, this is a very smart person figuring this out.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot more of just sort of, like, here's the line of the poem or whatever, and, like, ah, that means do this.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, there's a little bit more of a thought, like, Helena gives that translation and is, like, very charming and you know, like, doing some misdirection. And during the translation and everything, it's, like, a fun sequence. And then afterwards, she gives it to Indy, and he's like, oh, this is too heavy to be what it looks like.
Yeah.
And then there's the neat little reveal that there's more to it, and it's, you get to see, and, you know, it's like, again, it's the sort of thing where, like, it's definitely, like, preying on my feelings for the character, but it's like, you get to see her be very clever and cool, and then you get to see him figure something else out, and both of the, and Teddy and Helena be like, look at him, like, oh, very cool.
And then the bad guys just follow them.
Yeah. But yeah, so, like, that kind of stuff is, like, pretty satisfying in this movie, I thought. Once they get to the cave, it's a little bit more, to me, like... I guess the water displacement is pretty cool. But, like, you know, the sort of... that's the shape of a crescent. You're kind of back in the mode of, like, just looking for symbols and matching them. But there's some, like, pretty fun... puzzle solvey stuff. Again, it's a part of, like, the what's important about that character, or like an important element of the character, is that he's like also an academic and kind of increasingly stuffy about it, you know, like as he gets like older and less like effortlessly cool and charming, you know, it just starts to seem a little more fuddy-duddy, but he's like still, he still is just like a really smart character.
Yeah. I was interested how people thought this stacked up to the older, like, people, you know, people have their different favorites of the sequels, and I was curious what people's were. Like, mine is Temple of Doom by a fair margin. Rewatching them again recently, really, I was like, yeah, Temple of Doom is my favorite of the not Raiders. Raiders, I think, is...
I was gonna say, I thought Raiders was your favorite.
Yeah, Raiders, I think, like, again, I think Raiders is, like, a perfect action-adventure movie. It's just, like, you know, very... My pal Alex Dowd live-tweeted it for Vulture and was talking about a lot about the economy of the movie. There's, like, not a wasted second in it. Even the exposition in it is pretty exciting and, like, well-staged. And I think that's all true. It's, like, that truck chase is one of the best that kind of things ever mounted, and it's in the first Indiana Jones movie, which is wild. You know, there's, like, the iconic stuff with the bolt. I mean, it's just a fucking great movie. It, you know, Marion is a fantastic character, so endearing. Great costumes on everybody. Great everything. You know, it's funny. It's just it's a great action-adventure movie. Temple of Doom is, like, a much more off-putting, I guess. It's, like, both wonderfully both more childlike and also more viscerally disgusting and upsetting than the other ones. I mean, I think Nathaniel's right. The violence in Dial of Destiny feels a little more grown up than it does in Temple of Doom. But just in terms of pure, like, gnarliness. Like, people get their hearts ripped out. And it's, like, kind of racist in spots. There's monkey brain. You know, there's, like, people covered in disgusting bugs. You know, it's just... And I think it really, that really excites me. The opening sequence of Temple of Doom is like is one of the best Indiana Jones thing. The musical sequence that is super James Bondy, where he's like in the tuxedo and gets poisoned, has to get the antidote. And the last 45 minutes of it, is there anything that's as good as that? And like that's in the realm of like Fury Road or like the end of Attack of the Clones or Return of the Jedi, where it's just like just a solid like 40 minutes of just like kicking ass, great action sequences and on top of action sequences. And there's something kind of, I don't know, the kind of grimy pulpiness of it I just find really delightful, and like the nastiness of it is quite appealing, especially because it is offset a bit by like Short Round being adorable, and like he, you know, then when they hug at the end it's very sweet, like even though you also see Indy slap him around when he's brainwashed by the bad guys. It's, I don't know, I just
can
think
you also talk about like your experiences, like how you came to these movies.
I was trying to remember how I watched these movies, because I didn't see any in the theater until Crystal Skull. And it's possible Last Crusade was the first one I watched. It's possible Temple of Doom was. I don't think it was Raiders. So I did kind of watch them all in a jumble as a kid. Last Crusade was on HBO, I remember, like, the summer after it came out, you know, so I probably watched it then when I watched Batman and Ghostbusters 2. And Temple of Doom is just one where I kind of go back to the most in terms of just it just being the most fun. And I think it does a nice job of, like, still doing the Indiana Jones thing that you recognize from Raiders, but it's in a different kind of key, in a different kind of, you know, it kind of, it makes sense that it's a prequel based on what's going on with it. And I think it's gotten somewhat reclaimed over the years. For a while, it was really one of those sequels people really, you know, considered a real disappointment, like Back to the Future 2 or any number of, or things like that, or even like Empire or Jedi in their day. But even, I think, much more so than those.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, I mean, I think it's particularly...
People didn't like Back to the Future Part 2?
Yeah, it was kind of
It was always that's the bad one.
Yeah.
But, and that's not true, because like, I feel like there's... It was 50-50 if like Back to the Future 2 or Back to the Future 3 were the bad one.
Yeah,
like, one of them. Temple of Doom was the bad Indiana Jones for forever. But
yeah.
In part also, I think, because it had that reputation, which meant that Spielberg and then ultimately like Lucas and... I feel like I don't remember a lot of quotes from Ford about that.
Yeah.
But like Spielberg, definitely, and Lucas, I think, joining in... being like, yeah, that one didn't work.
Well, I think you can feel why I'm a little cooler towards Last Crusade, as much as it has some great gags, great opening sequence, Connery delightful, obviously, is that, boy, I really feel like you can feel Spielberg walking back and almost apologizing from this other movie that I really like, so I'm like, I don't want to hear the apology tour for that one. And it feels like it goes so far, it pulls so far back that he's not even in the kind of Raiders of the Lost Ark that's really Cook kind of way. Like the tank thing is pretty good.
That's pretty
great Indiana Jones action sequence. Before that, it's like mostly zany slapstick and like and bickering, which some of it's fun, but it's not that exciting. After the River Phoenix part is very exciting and fun, And the rest of it has a lot of good jokes, but it doesn't really have a lot of good Indiana Jones rock'em sock'em action.
Okay, I have to go next because I disagree wholeheartedly.
Your favorite, is it, right? Yeah. Sylvester said your favorite of all of them?
Well, I'll tell you how I came to the movies. I definitely saw Last Crusade in the theater, so... But I think I saw Temple of Doom way more.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
I feel like that's the one that was either always on cable
yeah,
or
you,
had cable.
You catch the last half of Temple of Doom, that's
yeah,
your afternoon.
Yeah, so I do love both of those, and I wouldn't disagree with anything you said about Temple of Doom. I do like that it's really nasty, and... I will also say that, like, I had no idea when I was a kid that these were, like, period movies at all. Uh-huh. But it's, like, it makes sense for Temple of Doom because, like, you're in a cave, you're not going to have, like, a TV. But it's, like,
right.
I didn't really know what a Nazi even was. Or, like, you know, it's, like, Europe, the car is just the gold. But we just watched, we rewatched Last Crusade with our daughter, and she just kind of checked out when it got to that tank chase because it comes, like, way too late. It goes on way too long, and the best stuff is right after that, which is the best puzzle solving.
The climax of Last Crusade, I will say, is very good. And they do a nice job of, like, finding their way. That's
like, when I watch an Indiana Jones movie, I want it to be all the part where he has to figure out that the penitent man kneels so he doesn't get his head chopped off.
That's
and,
neat. And
like, the, you know, you chose poorly with the cup.
It's also the part where it feels like it's not knocking off Raiders. And it's not knocking off, it's also not imitating Temple of Doom. Like, it's a pretty different, it really is, it's not an action climax. It's a, like, you know, puzzle
yeah,
solving,
and
like,
the action
like,
before that, I would say,
moral
is actually
decision.
Kind of boring. And then before that, I like all of the stuff that kind of, like, punctures the Indiana Jones myth, which I think they're kind of still trying to do with the old man stuff. But, you know, like, saying, like, oh, they named the dog Indiana, or, like, you know, the way that his dad is kind of, you know, making him seem uncool, and the thing with, like, he uses his umbrella to have the birds. I love all of that.
Yeah, I mean, those moments I do like. I just think they're in a movie that is sort of, like, a little plotting and a little, like, it really kind of feels like Spielberg is, like, does not want to unleash, like, if he's afraid, if he makes anything really, like, roller coastery, that it'll somehow veer into Temple of Doom and it'll get too much. So it just feels like a weirdly restrained movie. And like,
yeah, but I feel like you value the action more than I do, and I value kind of like the following the map.
Yeah, they all have the lines on the map.
Yeah, or like, you know, tricking people and outsmarting things.
Yeah, I always want to, like, I would say even that the first 45 of Crystal Skull, if the whole movie was as good as that, I would like it more than
that. I like that stuff too, but that's all very action heavy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's what I like to see. I like to see Spielberg yeah. and Ford
like my, you know,
do their
the
thing.
The thing that I like better is also part of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think Last Crusade does do that very well. I just, like, Raiders does both of those things well, so it's kind of a wash for me that this one, there's this other movie that does half of the thing, like, almost as well. But again, I was curious, I had no idea, Nathaniel, what, do you have a favorite of the sequels?
Do you remember how you saw them?
I'd have to ask my mom, because I feel like I have a memory of seeing Last Crusade in the theater, but that, I truly maybe an invented memory. I've seen it since, but, like, I'm remembering, like, the theater I went to as a child, and
yeah.
I truly have no idea if that's a real memory or not. I was definitely, both for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, the, like, middle entry was the one I saw last, and, it was the one that was, like, this is the dark one, the scary one, that I, like, had internalized that somehow. I don't think I was avoiding it for that reason. I think it was just, like, you know, I think probably had easy access to the first and third, and then, like, it was, like, okay, let's seek out the second one. Like, this is going to be the scary one, or the dark one, or whatever. And Temple of Doom, obviously, like, as a kid, I just knew, like, oh, if someone gets their heart ripped out in this
movie.
Yeah,
yeah. Talking to the playground, that one.
Yeah, like, you know.
Wait,
like,
and that's the one that we showed our 7-year-old first.
She chose it. She asked for it.
Yeah.
And also when she started Last Crusade, they have, like, the scouts or whatever, and she's like, if there are any kids that die in this, just let me know right now. So I think we really did a number on her kid.
Yeah, so I don't remember, like, which one I saw first or in what order. Like, there definitely were movies that I just, like, remember,
yeah,
like, you know, internalizing very hard. Very heavily, and, like, I love all of that. Like, when you were saying, like, you value the puzzle solving or you value the action stuff, is like, well, I like more heavily, you know, like, you, well, I'm sure you enjoy both, but, like, you have a
yeah.
preference, and I'm just like, I think that scale is balanced for me, where, like, all three of, and I love Crystal Skull too, but like those three original pictures that I saw like a bunch when I was a kid, I just like, and it's like, why, you know, Harrison Ford, between Han Solo, who, you know, is like a big part of the Star Wars movies, but like Indiana Jones, then it's like, this is all Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And like, I think because of the kind of hero he was, that he is, like, an awesome two-fisted guy swinging around on a whip and, you know, like, with a cool outfit and having all these adventures, but also that he, like, clearly, like, was bookish and, you know, like, had this yeah. other side to him. I think, like, that, coupled with, like, Harrison Ford is, like, very handsome and cool and, like, you know, just, like, kind of charming and fun, but, like, not in a, like, really, you know... He's got, like, kind of secret physical comedy chops, but he's not, like... And he's, like, funny, but he's not, like, you know, a comedian.
Yeah.
That I was just, like, that is, like... That's what a grown-up man is. Like, that, like, you know, yeah. I really internalized that, of, like, that is what you should, you know, like... Because also, I was, like, young and did not notice, like, some of the rougher edges of the character.
Yeah, no. Well, I think, so, like, as much as I roll my eyes sometimes at the people our age or a little older who have such a reverence for Han Solo, especially, and Indiana Jones, of course, and Harrison Ford, who's, obviously, I like a lot as an actor, but I never really, like, cared that much about Han Solo. I did love Indiana Jones. I probably saw Temple of Doom more times than any Star Wars movie when I was a kid. Uh-huh. But he is, of course, if you're a kid growing up at a certain time when mostly you're seeing interested in funny movies and like
yeah.
and genre movies, you're mostly your other movie stars in that period are like Bill Murray and Chevy Chase.
Well, the action movie stars are like the super muscle bound.
Right,
like,
and then when I was a kid,
I was not watching those as a kid.
I didn't watch those as like a, you know, 5-year-old.
And it's like, I didn't realize that Harrison Ford was like considered handsome when I was a kid. Right, he's like oiled up in the Temple of Doom.
He's like,
he's like, crazy beautiful, and like at least the first two, especially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a very beautiful man, and he is like, I didn't even think about it until probably now, but he's one of my first experiences of like a regular male movie star who's not a, kind of a goofball or something like Bob. You know, I love Roger Rabbit as a kid, but like Bob Hoskins,
yeah,
is a great actor.
Christopher Lloyd is like, right. You know, there for you as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
At that age, but
or like, even Michael J. Fox, who has very star qualities and he's great, but like he's comic. I mean, he's a comic.
Yeah,
hero.
Like Marty McFly, it was just like. That's a cool kid.
Yeah, yeah. He's not a grown up. Yeah, he's literally like a teenager in high school, even though Fox was much older by the time the movies were over. And Ford is like probably my first experience with like, oh, a movie star who is an adult who like has that movie star quality, who's not just like one of the goody guys in the movies, you know, Rick Moranis or something,
yeah.
who I love, but like, yeah, yeah. He's not the same. He's not a. Not a Harrison Ford movie star. And he's, like, I never think of Ford as a goat. Like, I think of the movie stars I really love. I think probably more into Cruise or Denzel, maybe more because of their filmographies than anything else. But, like, I'd never seen a Cruise movie or a Denzel Washington movie when I was 9 years old, and I had seen Indiana Jones movie. So it is very, like, that is a formative imprint that he makes on you, which is really, I feel like that's so many people that must have been that had that experience of, like, oh, a movie star is... I mean, I didn't think of it that way as a 9-year-old, but, like, in retrospect, yeah, that was the first time you saw... You know, you didn't see Pacino or De Niro when you're 9 years old, necessarily.
Also, like, another weird thing that I think about a lot is that our 7-year-old who just saw this year, like, most of the Indiana Jones movies, has probably already seen at least half a dozen characters in other shows wearing the Indiana Jones
right.
hat
yeah, yeah.
to signal, like, immediate adventure. And it's, like, hard for me to figure out what the hat means to her. Because, yeah, the first time she saw it was probably character My Little Pony. Like,
or Mickey during, Mouse Club.
Mickey Mouse Clubhouse has like, a Kansas City Mickey. Instead of okay. And, like, you know. There's also Ridley Jones on Netflix, who is a Night at the Museum style, like, museum caretaker. And okay. the exhibits come to life. She's got the hat. Her last name is Jones. So, like, when you already experience it so much... But, like, what is it like when you finally...
Especially because, like, I mean, there's a new movie now, but, like, it's not like he's been... Because it is Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones, and they make these movies, you know, the last couple entries have been, like, 20 years apart or whatever, 15 years apart. It's not like there's a lot of Indiana Jones in the culture.
Right.
Like,
right.
a real Indiana Jones in the culture around her.
Right, like, I honestly think that she thinks that that's, like, a hat that people who go out and do archaeology wear.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, that's kind of like what a... that's kind of what I think.
It's not. It's
like, they do the Jurassic Park to signal that Alan Grant is, like, at least a little bit cool, as they give him, like, kind of a bullshit version of Indiana's hat, like, for him
is
to
that
wear.
A cool one?
It's yeah. Well, like, right, to make him look a little bit cool, yeah. like, you know, to say, okay, he's not a total, he's not 100% Indiana, Indy teaching class. He's a little bit, he can rise to the occasion of Indy when he's in
right.
physical danger, because he's got the hat. So you do internalize that, I think, but I do wonder, you know, it's certainly, I mean, that's just a whole different way about kids, how they experience media, because, like,
right. and, like, we already had some of that, because, like, none of us watched them in order.
Well, nobody sat me down, sat me down to watch Indiana Jones that I recall. I'm pretty sure, like, Temple of Doom, I feel like, is the one I've seen the most, or I saw the most as a kid, because I feel like it was the one that the rights must have been up, you know, further along, that he was on the Superstation in the afternoon.
Yeah,
like, and Last
we
Crusade
actually
was
had the three VHS boxes.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I feel
so.
Like if one of them was being pulled out, it was
Temple of Doom.
Temple
yeah.
of Doom.
And each generation gets a little more removed from that, because there's not, like, she doesn't, you know, kids now don't flip through channels on a Sunday afternoon and tape or watch the movies that the whatever shows at 2 o'clock, 1, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 4 o'clock, like I did, or like lots. I'm sure lots of kids did who were my age. So I don't know. So I think kids just come into it in a different way. And I think part of why the new one is not doing that well is a little bit of a lack of, like, think when Crystal Skull came out, there were enough nostalgics and maybe kids who were still maybe growing up on that kind of channel flipping thing and
right.
new Indiana Jones. I think now that
it's
audience...
Like, what does she care about some old man?
Right, right. That's what she said when I was like, why would I want to watch a movie about an old man? And I was like, when I first said you could come see it with us.
No, and like, it's hard to know, like, they like made a big to-do. They put all the movies and the Young Indie show on Disney Plus, but it was like a month before the new movie.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know if that, like... I'm hard to know for anybody, including them, I'm sure, of, like, what's the right timing for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
at least they are good about doing that, Disney especially, about
yeah, yeah.
putting out all the old
But, like, if they had done it a year ago, would that
yeah.
have helped see
yeah.
this better, or
yeah,
would it make any
true.
Difference at all?
I mean, it did, like, we did watch all of them with her, except for Raiders, I guess. She
yeah.
just, like, wants to
watch
well,
she didn't watch Crystal Skull yet, too. She wants
oh, but
that.
She wants to watch that, yeah.
She doesn't want to watch Raiders, just to fucking
You know,
eat
when
it,
I was that age, I flat out refused to watch Close Encounters. My mom brought it home from the video store like a million times, and I was like, it looks boring. And I didn't watch it until this year. So.
Until you watched it like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I watched it in advance of Asteroids.
And was it boring?
Could have been trimmed.
You liked it, though.
But I did like it. No, it's really good. I don't think I would have liked it then, though.
No, I didn't watch that until I was a teenager. Well, although you were probably a teenager when your mom was bugging you.
Maybe
one
or two of the
But, yeah, I mean, I think, and also, like, the audience that reveres Indiana Jones is less, just doesn't go out to the movies as much right now, as they probably did 10 or 15 years ago, because they were also,
like,
they were 10 or 15 years younger.
Just
right?
that audience is not going to move the needle, you know, like, you need to have.
Yeah, well, you know, if everyone who saw Crystal Skull went to see this, they'd
well,
be, they'd be
it's
in good
like, it's
but,
been interesting, because,
yeah,
like,
died,
before this one came out, we went to see, or we went, like, on a trip for, you know, weekend and stayed in a hotel and had the Disney Channel on a bunch for the kids, and there were Dial of Destiny ads, like, every break. And it was interesting seeing the, like, the way that the ads were kind of designed to be, like, this guy goes on adventures. And, like, he has the best adventure. You want to see this? And it wasn't, like, that child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, but it was, like, it really was, like, you know, it wasn't the ad of, like, you know Indiana Jones, come see his movie. It
yeah.
was, like... This is the guy who has the best adventures, and he's having his last one.
Yeah,
and it was really interesting seeing those, and it did make me wonder, like, oh, this is on every ad break during, like, Disney Junior programming.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's going all the way around the, you know, the dial for all these Disney channels, and, like, yeah, how much is that making a kid, like, how much do these ads get a kid to want to see it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, and then even when you take it, you have to do like. That guy was in that movie. That's what they're talking about here.
Yeah.
So this movie, the references are pretty oblique, I would say. Like,
yeah.
Well, it's like solid, like, Does she know who Sala was?
I don't know if she remembered, because she had just seen Temple of Doom before this one, so he's not in it, right?
He's not in Temple of Doom, no. But, like, you know, he shows up, and it's just, like, someone who helps Indy really quickly. Yeah. And, like, it's not like they talk in detail about something you need to know about, from before.
Right, but you also, like, when he comes on the screen, she wasn't,
you're not excited to see Sala.
Talk about, if you're trying to get, like, a younger audience, I think that, like, Ghostbusters... Afterlife did a better job.
Oh, just sure,
because they had kids.
They converted the series into what the, you know, that was a series of like comedy movies that were, you know, for
80s comedies,
teenagers and for adults, and that had a big kid audience. And then they made a sequel where they were like, well, okay, we're just gonna make it a. Let's lean into what this historically has done well for this thing. And Indiana Jones, there isn't like a strong way into, there's not, you know, there are kid sidekicks here and there, but it's in a movie about adults going on like motorcycle.
Having old man, regrets.
Yeah, there's not the Star Wars aspect of like, well, there'll be an alien, or there'll be a droid that is funny, you know, that doesn't have quite, it's not quite, it's pitched a little. It's at the time, I feel like when it came out, I would say Indiana Jones and Star Wars are pitched at a very similar level of like kid friendly and that adults would probably also like. And I think now the culture has shifted more towards the Star Wars. Star Wars is kind of more considered a thing that kids like, and Indy isn't. They have toys. They have so many toys. I feel so bad for them. They made so many toys for Indiana Jones.
But did they make Dial of Destiny toys? Because all the toys I saw were Marion Ravenwood and her old.
Yeah, I don't know if they made the little ones, but they definitely made fancy $25 Hasbro toys.
I think they did. I think there's been a big, I only see this on Twitter photos or something that they were making announcements sort of semi-regularly of here's the next set, and it was a real mix of these are the Temple of Doom ones, these are Dial of Destiny ones, these are Raiders ones.
You know, the little Star Wars guys, the
3 inches,
yeah, they did a whole bunch. I mean, I don't know how bunch, but they have you can get Helena Shaw in that size.
And I thought it was just you can get Marion Ravenwood, you can get...
The retro kind of old style 3¾ inch figures seem to be mostly Raiders, although I think there was at least some Temple of Doom, and they might be rolling out more. But there's a bunch of action figures that span the movies. I'm sure they're all going to be on clearance. This has never been a big toy series.
Well, people who buy action figures are adults.
Yeah, so that's true. And then maybe the people buy them. But this was never, Star Wars, once upon a time, was heavily consumed by children buying toys. And I think Indiana Jones, they've tried in the past. I remember Crystal Skull, there was Legos and there was some action figures, and it just never really popped off. And I think this is a series that Star Wars has kind of stayed forever young to some,
Star Wars, there's robots and armor and stuff. It's Indiana Jones. After you get the Indiana Jones toy, are you going to get the Nazi toys?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was we get an indie one, but what do I want? Even Sala, he doesn't do anything, action-wise. The Marion one is kind of cool. It has her white dress and Raiders.
I think I saw a picture of a Henry Sr. one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you
make them wander around saying, does anyone speak English?
Yeah. Get a.
I love that gag. Yeah. That's a Last Crusade.
Or, Belloc. You can get Belloc, and I was this is a recipe for $2 clearance. in the future. But yeah, I think this is a series that the audience has aged with to some extent, and Star Wars, the audience has probably aged a bit. I don't think kids are as nuts about Star Wars as they were in 1985, but there are. It's still a thing that kids get into.
Yeah, they've expanded the Star Wars world so much that you can.
Yeah, you can show your kids Star Wars babies or whatever it is on Disney.
Yeah, some kids like Baby Yoda.
Yeah,
probably really excited about Ahsoka.
Yeah,
there's
cartoons and stuff. Yeah. Not that they should do that with Indiana Jones. It's just
it's not as elastic as
And it's a style of movie that is not. There's been a lot of imitators, but it's never really been a thing that's been easy to imitate successfully.
Yeah. I would say The Mummy is the closest.
Yeah, The Mummy and International Treasure both kind of
have the vibe. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And they,
I'm talking about the Stephen Sommers movie.
Romancing the Stone.
Yes.
That was a...
Yeah, yeah.
People have done it. But.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the... I don't know. It's not universally as ripped off as the kind of tropes and structures of Star Wars. Which is, kind of makes it feel more special, but it's... it's interesting that it's... That's it. Adventure-y movies are hard. There are not a lot of
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of attempts that fail, too.
And yeah.
Like, you know, like something like John Carter of Mars or...
Right, Prince of Persia, just because we were in that toy store and I was rummaging through all the old action figures and they had a bunch of Prince of Persia and I was like, oh yeah, this was trying to do that, like, in the period, but it was, did not go off. I was curious, I wanted to ask Nathaniel one thing before we go. Because you've consumed non-cinematic ancillary material. That what you would, the TV show, which the Young Indiana Jones TV show.
Yeah, I would say that comes with like a kind of asterisk recommendation because it is a different thing than the show.
Yeah.
Or than the movies.
Yeah.
That, you know, they do occasionally have episodes that have some like action sequence stuff. Like the last episode, he's like a stunt person for John Ford and like... straight up does a like crawl under the cart thing stunt in a way that is like origin story for Indy learning how to like, you know, get dragged under a vehicle, you know, like that kind of thing.
Does he say horizon here Ford?
No, it's young handsome John Ford. So I definitely like think it's like really good and it's interesting in that it like is pretty successfully interesting in terms of like it does drag you through a lot of early 20th century history. Like the DVDs came out with documentaries accompanying them. It was pretty neat. It was like straight up half hour documentaries about like three or four per movie of like, you know, this is one about Edith Wharton and one about the Bolsheviks and one about, you know, like just like every episode would have like a handful of topics that you could like learn about. So like that makes it sound really stuffy and it is kind of like dorkier than I like Sean Patrick Flannery in the show actually, but like he's, you know, he's no Harrison Ford. He's not even River Phoenix doing a perfect Harrison Ford impression. You know, he's like a little more square than that. And Indy, the character is written like, you know, he's like, it's like pre-noir era, you know, fallen from grace indie. So he's like a little more naive and he's falling in love every third episode or, you know, like it's a different thing. But I recommend it. There's a series of novels that they put out in the 90s, early 90s, I think, that were like all prequels to Raiders that are interesting. Like, it's funny, some of Dial of Destiny, including like where it goes in the end, a little bit watching it, I had this feeling, I remember I talking about it, I think back for like the Independence Day sequel, where it was like, this feels like someone made a movie of a novel sequel, like the sequel to the novelization book that never was written. And like the Dial of Destiny, some of it feels, I mean, like he's a young man in those books, but like some of it feels a little bit like in terms of sort of being like, I think like you were saying, like, you know, remove a few of the authors and see what an Indiana Jones adventure looks like.
Yeah.
And the books are like, some of them are a mixed bag. It's pretty cool to have like a series of pulp adventure books about actual Indiana Jones instead of about, you know, like the books that actually inspired him. But like some of those are pretty cool. And then I've only played, I think, one or two video games, but the one, like, the video games I recommend is Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, which was, like, Lucas, I don't know what it was called, if it was Lucas Arts at the time, or if it was Lucasfilm Games, or whatever, that they did these, like, the Tale of Monkey Island, and Maniac Mansion, and Day of the Tentacle, like, adventure, point-and-click adventure games back in, like, the, you know, like Leisure Suit Larry style. Like,
I love those.
Yeah. So this was, because I feel like originally Lucas way was like, we have this division, but like you can't use any of the property, like any of my Star Wars or Indiana Jones stuff. Like I want you to come up with original stuff. And so the games were like fun and weird and interesting. And then they made an Indiana Jones one, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, that has like some similar flavor. It's like funny and weird, and it's like a pretty good Indiana Jones story. And it's like, For people who have not gamed in some time, like me, it's like, you know, it's a point and click adventure game, so it's like got a really fun thing. You can find it like to download online and purchase. I think, I'm sure, on Steam or wherever. I was really hoping that, like, this new movie would lead them to make an iOS version, because it seems, like, perfect for, like, playing on an iPad, and they didn't do it. So that's, like, yeah, Lucasfilm, if you're listening.
I'm sure they are.
Whoever, yeah. Whoever at Disney has to okay this and get it through, you should make the iPad version of that game.
Yeah, it's interesting that, like, also that this is a big, you know, that... This movie not doing a huge business and not having a bunch of, you know, game tie-ins or TV show plans. It's like a giant property that Disney spent a ton of money to, like, wrap up. And it's, like, which is sort of interesting. Like, it's usually the idea is to spend a lot of money in order to revive and to perpetuate. And this is just a really expensive movie that is, like... You know, there's no real room for... I mean, again, like, you guessed it could have whatever happened. You want it to happen after it, but everyone involved has said, like, this is...
Yeah, like, I could certainly imagine if this movie was a hit, then you could imagine, like, a Hell in a Shaw movie.
Right. And I'm sure that they thought the same thing about Shia LaBeouf before he went off the deep end and...
Yeah, that they
had
might...
a whole thing with Spielberg.
And falling out, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you could imagine that. I don't know that that will be the case now if, you know, maybe they would still... think there's a way to go forward. And, like, you know, there were rumors of a Ravenwood, like, prequel show.
Right.
That seems like it's probably not happening. And, like, one assumes that people at Lucasfilm heard the same thing everybody on the internet when, like, the headlines of maybe an Indiana Jones TV show, everybody was like, it's about Short Round, right? So, like, one assumes that there, you know, someone somewhere is like, you know, what's the best way to have him play this character?
Right.
So, like, there's things you could do, and, like, you know, it's hard to know, like, if they're going to look at it and go, like, this is an old thing that we're going to just continue to, like, make money off of in the, like, you know, it's an old thing that we own
yeah.
way, and it's in the parks and whatever.
Yeah,
or,
the Disneyland ride, we didn't mention.
Which is really great. Like, yeah, I should have recommended that as one of the, like, the non-movie things, because it's one of the best rides, yeah. But, like, you know, so it's hard to tell if it's going to continue in that way or if they're going to, you know, in however long when Ford and Spielberg and Lucas are not around anymore, if that's when they're going to be like, let's try this out again.
Right.
And, like, what, you know, right now I don't think there's any appetite for that because, the people who care about the character probably don't really care about seeing someone other than Harrison Ford play the character.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, sometime down the road... You know, it's one wonders if they're going to be like, this is a character that has some name recognition, even though he probably won't at that point.
Right,
know, like,
right.
Well, the cartoons will always have the hat.
Well, they always, yeah, and there's always,
yeah.
the you know.
And that's true. They could also do something animated, you know, for Disney Channel or for the Disney Plus and, you know, try and reintroduce the idea of the character before they tried something else out with it down the road. I'm not even, you know, not that I... Harrison Ford was my Indiana Jones. I watched the Young Indie show. Like, I've seen other people play Indiana Jones enough.
Yeah,
but
it's feels like it's if they were gonna make it a James Bond thing, the time to do that was, you know, 1993.
Yeah, and like, the last two movies. I mean, the TV show started this for me, but then the last two movies also really, like I said, it becomes like an interesting biography of this, like, you know, the secret most interesting guy in the 20th century.
Yeah.
And so, like...
He's, like, actually traveled through time and space.
Yeah, so it's, like... Yeah, you could go back and make other movies, but, like... You know, you've already followed this guy for 70 years.
There's still a little room for him to have a very old Indiana Jones doing the early internet paranoia thriller.
Ooh, yeah. And he can still have another son, because... De Niro and Pacino. He is like a mad old dad,
close to Flockhart. That's right.